Arjuna looked. Krishna said, "See who has assembled." Arjuna was paralyzed with grief and confusion.
Sarva Bhuyatamam Bhuya Shinume Paramam Vachaha. Ishtosi me dridam iti tato vakshami te hitam. Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Lord has given Arjuna knowledge that is confidential, knowledge of Brahman, and still more confidential, knowledge of the Supersoul within everyone's heart. And now He is giving the most confidential part of knowledge. Just surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the end of the 9th chapter, He has said, "Man mana, just always think of me." The same instruction is repeated here to stress the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. This essence is not understood by a common man, but by one who is actually very dear to Krishna, a pure devotee of Krishna. This is the most important instruction in all Vedic literature. What Krishna is saying in this connection is the most essential part of knowledge, and it should be carried out not only by Arjuna, but by all living entities. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishasti sastyam te pratijani priyoshime. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Purport. The most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna and always think of Him and act for Him. One should not become an official meditator. Life should be so molded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. One should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where he will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. This most confidential part of knowledge spoken is spoken to Arjuna because he is the dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna. The very form with two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. There are descriptions found of Krishna in the Brahma Samhita and other literatures. One should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi forms as Vishnu, Narayana, Ram, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge. And this is disclosed to Arjuna because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam saranam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshai shami masajaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Purport. The Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Supersoul, knowledge of the different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order of life, knowledge of non-attachment, sense and mind control, meditation, etc. He is described in so many different types of religion. Now in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reactions. For the Lord personally promises to protect him. In the 7th chapter it was said that only one who has become free from all sinful reactions can take to the worship of Lord Krishna. Thus, one may think that unless he is free from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically freed. There is no need of strenuous effort to free oneself from sinful reactions. One should unhesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities. With faith and love, one should surrender unto him. The process of surrender to Krishna is described in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. According to the devotional process, one should simply accept such religious principles that will lead ultimately to the devotional service of the Lord. One may perform a particular occupational duty according to his particular position in the social order. But if by executing his duty, One does not come to the point of Krishna consciousness. All his activities are in vain. Anything that does not lead to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness should be avoided. One should be confident that in all circumstances, Krishna will protect him from all difficulties. There is no need of thinking how one should keep the body and soul together. Krishna will see to that. One should always think himself helpless and should consider Krishna the only basis for his progress in life. As soon as one seriously engages himself in devotional service to the Lord, in full Krishna consciousness, at once he becomes freed from all contamination of material nature. There are different processes of religion and purificatory processes by cultivation of knowledge, meditation, and a mystic yogic system, etc. But one who surrenders unto Krishna does not have to execute so many methods. That simple surrender unto Krishna will save him from unnecessarily wasting time. One can thus make all progress at once and be freed from all sinful reactions. One should be attracted to the beautiful vision of Krishna. His name is Krishna because he is all attractive. One who becomes attracted by the beautiful, all-powerful, omnipotent vision of Krishna is fortunate. There are different kinds of transcendentalists. Some of them are attached to the impersonal Brahman vision. Some of them are attached to the super soul feature, etc. But one who is attracted to the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and above all, one who was attracted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna himself, is the most perfect transcendentalist. In other words, devotional service to Krishna in full consciousness is the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Karma yogis, empiric philosophers, mystics, and devotees are all called transcendentalists, but one who is a pure devotee is the best of all. The particular words used here, ma suchaha, do not fear, do not hesitate, do not worry, are very significant. One may be perplexed as to how one can give up all kinds of religious forms and simply surrender unto Krishna. But such worry is useless. Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this, because you are my very dear friend. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. Hare Krishna. The conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is thus so compassionately explained by Srila Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita as it is. Today we are celebrating Gita Jayanti, the anniversary of Krishna speaking the essence of all Vedic literatures in the form of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna in Kurukshetra. By hearing from Sri Bhagavad Gita on this particular day, in a spirit of submissive attention, the supreme mercy of the Lord can easily be attained. Bhagavad Gita is glorified by all the great acharyas as the very essence of all transcendental knowledge. Gita Mahatmyam describes that the essence of the Vedas is the Upanishads. Upanishads is compared to a cow. Lord Sri Krishna is cowherd boy, Gopal. Arjuna is calf. And Krishna is extracting the milk from the cow. That milk is the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is drinking that milk, which is an ambrosial nectar. But we know that a good cow gives far more milk than only her calf can drink. So Krishna is distributing that same milk to all fortunate souls who drink the nectar of Bhagavad Gita. But they must approach Krishna in the same mood as Arjuna. Srila Prabhupada has explained when he came to the United States of America how there were multi-editions of Sri Bhagavad Gita translated in English as well as so many other languages of the world. But he did not find a single edition which contained a commentary that even touched on the spirit of the true purpose of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains in the Gita itself, Rajya Vidya Rajaguyam Pavitram Itamuttamam Pratyakshavakamam Dharmam Shushukam Karatamam, that this knowledge is the king of education. It is the most confidential knowledge, most secret of all secrets, because it brings about actual revelation and realization of the Supreme Self in relation to the spirit soul. By understanding Bhagavad Gita properly, one can understand and directly perceive the eternal soul's relation with Krishna. and enjoy unlimited ecstasy. Bhagavad Gita is one of the most widely published books in all of the planet Earth. Different publishing houses putting together their publications. There's hundreds of millions of volumes that has been distributed over thousands and thousands of years. So how is it that Krishna is explaining that this is the most confidential knowledge? Do you tell a secret to everyone? If a friend of yours tells you a confidential secret, do you publish it in hundreds of publishing houses all over the world and distribute it widely? Krishna knows past, present, and future. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavashani chabutani mamtu vedana kashjana. He knows everything. And he knows everyone. It is secret because even if you read the words, you cannot understand what Krishna is saying. Unless you approach the cow and the cowherd boy as a submissive calf, like Arjuna, bhakto simesha kacheti rahasyam hetadutam sa eva yamayateya yoga propta puratana. Krishna tells Arjuna that you can understand this knowledge because you are my devotee and my friend. You can enter into the mysteries of this deepest, most profound ocean of the essence of all wisdom, because you have this two qualifications. Arjuna was not sannyasi. Arjuna was not Brahman. Arjuna was devotee and the friend of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to stress this point out of his causeless mercy. Naham vipro na chana rabpatir napi vaishuna shudra. I'm not a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. I'm not a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyasi. These are external, temporary social roles. Krishna explains in Gita, Chatur Varna Mayastristam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. He has created the social system of Varnashram Dharma. And every civilized person must follow his particular prescribed duties carefully. But we should understand that by following these particular prescribed duties, we are coming to the level of proper human existence. But the essence, yat karoshi yat asnasi yat johoshi tadasi yat yat tapasyasi kontaya tat karushu madarapanam, that whatever we do it as an offering of love to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, echoing the essence of the Gita? Who can understand Gita as it is? Gopi Bhartur Padakamala Yora Dasa 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 Anudas. One who performs his roles but does not identify with those roles. Because in different births, you have different bodies and you play different roles. Vasamsi janani yathavihayana vani granati naroparani tathasarirani vihaya janani adhyati samyati navani dehi. These bodies and all the occupational duties we have in these bodies are just like so many dresses that are constantly being changed by the power of time and the laws of nature. But what is our eternal identity? Who are we? We are the eternal servants of Krishna. The eternal servants of the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna should be the ambition. In this spirit alone is the mysteries of Sri Bhagavad Gita revealed to our hearts. This is very important. As long as we have any desire to enjoy anything of this world for our own selfish purposes, we are not really a servant of Krishna. We are still servants of the mind and senses. Ahankara vimudata kartaham iti manu. Still bewildered by the false ego, we call ourselves servants of Krishna. But are we really servants of Krishna? Even when we offer our food, are we cooking thinking that this, I will eat this, but first I'll offer it to Krishna? Or are we offering ourselves, our body, mind, words, and life at the lotus feet of Krishna unconditionally, and in that spirit offering him food? If that is your consciousness, then you are a servant of Krishna. If that is not your consciousness, you cannot understand Bhagavad Gita, because you're not bhakto sime shakacheti mahasyam hitadutamam. You are not really Krishna's devotee or friend. Therefore, tadvati pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upatekshati te jnanam jnanina satadarshana. Or in other words, if you are not really a servant of Krishna, you can still understand the mysteries of Bhagavad Gita if you become the servant of the servant of his servants and you hear from them. Evam parampara praptam idam rajashaya vidhu. Krishna explains in the fourth chapter of Gita that he explained this science to the sun god Vivishwan long, long before. Vivishwan instructed it to his son, Manu, who instructed it to his disciple, Ikshvaku. But the nature of this material world is everything is being attacked by ignorance. Know that anything you have that is holy is under attack. There are enemies all around trying to steal that wealth away from you. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Real religion can only be established by God himself. And therefore, Krishna explains in Gita, he comes from time to time to establish religious principles. Yada yada hi dharmasya klanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamya. But every time he establishes it, along with it he establishes parampara, a disciplic chain to preserve that message. Within this disciplic line of great Kshatriya kings, Krishna explains, the knowledge was lost. The degenerating, degrading powers of material nature perverted and corrupted the true message of the Gita, which is Sanatana Dharma. It is eternal. Therefore, Krishna says, now I am restoring it. I am telling it again to you today. And you can understand it because you are my devotee. Arjuna, as the dear friend and devotee of Krishna, descended into this world specifically to assist Krishna in his mission in this world. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapa naradaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Krishna reveals his mission to annihilate the miscreants. Arjuna was very much an instrument in the battlefield of Kurukshetra in annihilating the undesirable powers of Maya in this world, to protect the innocent. Arjuna, as a Kshatriya, that was his life and soul. But he did it on behalf of Krishna. He did it to reestablish the principles of religion. Bhagavad Gita was not required to be heard from Arjuna. However, Krishna, by his own yogamaya potency, orchestrated the most wonderful scenario by which Arjuna represented every conditioned soul in this cosmic manifestation. On behalf of all living beings, conditioned by the modes of nature, Arjuna was showing how to understand the truth and attain perfection in life. This material world is compared to a battlefield. Due to the influence of the three modes of material nature, there is always good and evil. There is the godly and the godless. These dualities have been existing since the very beginning creation of the universe. We read in Srimad Bhagavatam how when Lord Brahma was first creating the universe, right at the beginning stages,
terrible Rakshasa demoniac beings were coming out. Why? Arjuna is a devotee, an enlightened, compassionate soul. Why would he create these beings? He had no choice. Because when the spirit soul misuses his independence in a very grotesque way, he creates a karmic situation where this has to be his birth. And Lord Brahma has to facilitate that. At the very beginning of creation, Madhu and Kaitava, they were born. And what was the first thing they wanted to do? They wanted to steal the Vedas, knowing that this knowledge will destroy them, will make them impotent if it is understood and practiced. Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas warned us that what do people who have selfish, demoniac mentality want to do? On every level, systematically, they want to break people's faith in the knowledge of the Vedas. They want to distort, compromise, and pollute the true teachings. Because without that knowledge, no one has any hope except to be enslaved under the clutches of the demoniac forces of this world. Madhu Kaitabu were very intelligent. Steal the Vedas, we are the rulers of the world. We are the rulers of the entire universe. But Lord, in form of Hayagriva, executed them very nicely. In another kalpa, when Lord Brahma was creating, demoniac beings came right out of his body, and the first thing they did is they attacked him, their own father. They wanted to exploit him. They wanted to have sex with him, pollute him, corrupt him. Because they knew the four Vedas are coming out of his mouth. They knew he's the original guru. If he falls, then we are the rulers. Krishna explains in Gita, the darkness that are born of ignorance, which is the source of all suffering and bondage, can be slashed to pieces, cut by the sharpened sword of transcendental knowledge. No knowledge, no hope. And these forces are always here within material existence. Sometimes the forces of godliness are predominant, and in other times the forces of godlessness and exploitation are predominant. In Kali Yuga, this is especially so. So Bhagavad Gita was arranged to be spoken on a battlefield because we are all on a battlefield. Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Samaveda Yogyotshiva, Mama Kapandavaschaiva Kima Kurvati Sanjaya. But Krishna chose that this battle be fought in the Dharma Kshetra, a very, very holy place of pilgrimage. We know from Sri Mahabharata, from which the Bhagavad Gita has emanated, about the atrocities of the sons of Dhritarashtra against the sons of Pandu. Yudhisthira Maharaj was the rightful heir to the throne. But because his father, Pandu, had died an untimely death when his five children were too young to take the throne, Dhritarashtra, who was blind physically and also by the influence of his demoniac son, blind spiritually, he took the throne with the agreement that it is only as a temporary caretaker until Yudhisthira comes of age. However, in the process, his eldest son, Duryodhana, seeing his father enthroned, he lusted for that power. Seeing that the Pandavas were in every respect more qualified than him, he burned with envy. He wanted to destroy them. He wanted to rule over them. He saw the very dearmost servants of Lord Krishna as obstacles to his nefarious ambitions in life. Too much opulence, too much association with money, women, and power can pollute a person's mind. Of course, we have to understand that Duryodhana was not an ordinary living being. Recently, one of my godbrothers, who I believe will be coming here after a few months to visit, His Holiness Srila Hridayananda Goswami Maharaj, we spent a day together. And he has been for several years very, very thoroughly studying Mahabharata and the various commentaries, especially that by Sripad Madhvacharya, because he's trying to write an actual authoritative translation of Mahabharata, which is practically impossible to find these days. Because there's so much abuse and distortion of the scripture. He was explaining to me that there's one section in Mahabharata where Duryodhana, he had already cheated the Pandavas in this game of dice, banished them to the forest for 12 years. But that wasn't enough. When you hate someone, when you're envious of someone, nothing's enough. Krishna explains in Gita that lust burns like fire. Is there ever enough fuel to satisfy a fire? And envy is the very basis of lust. Pandavas are in forest. He wanted to break their hearts by humiliating them. He arranged a royal procession with himself sitting with all the paraphernalia of a king to specifically go right to where the Pandavas were living like hermits in the forest, just to sneer at them. But on the way, there was a Gandharva who was bathing. Duryodhana wanted to take bath there. The king has come. Gandharva, he's not my king. Kuru means king of world. So there was fight. This Gandharva sent Karna and everybody else running for their lives. He defeated Duryodhana. At that time, it was brought to the attention of the Pandavas that unless you come to save Duryodhana, he's going to be destroyed. Bhima said, let him be destroyed. Why should we interfere with the will of Providence? And Arjuna, he shared the same opinion. But Yudhisthira Maharaj said, no, you must fight and protect the king. Fight and protect him. What has he done for us? When we are fighting amongst ourselves, we're 105. But if an outside force comes and attacks, we are 105. So they fought. And then Duryodhana was brought by Gandharva and thrown at the feet of Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira said, "You let him go, let him be free. Duryodhana, you shouldn't behave so foolishly anymore. Yudhisthira saved his life. Was he grateful? More fuel to the fire? He became more hateful, more envious, more vengeful, because he came to humiliate Yudhisthira and it ended up that Yudhisthira humiliated him. It was worse than death. Krishna says in Gita, for a Kshatriya who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So he actually decided to, he just renounced his kingdom and decided to just fast till death. He didn't want to live anymore. It was too painful to his ego that he was saved by Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, including Bhima, his enemy. When he was little boy, he tried to poison Bhima by giving him poison. Deadly poison. He tried to murder all the Pandavas by putting them in house of lac and setting it on fire. And yet, the same people that he's trying to murder all his life save his life. That's embarrassing. So Hridayananda Maharaj explained to me that the Rakshasas, the most demoniac beings who live in other planets, they actually made a conspiracy to conquer the universe. You see, this earth planet is not a planet of Rakshasas. It's a planet of ordinary souls like us. But there are planets that are demoniac kingdoms. You see, a Rakshasa is not just one of our friends who just happens to like to eat humans. Rakshasa is a race. It's a demoniac race that have the same power. Gods. Except they're against God. That's why you find, you don't see the Rakshasas in the Bhagavatam fighting so much with humans. They just kill them and eat them. The battles are with the demigods. There's Diti and Aditi. Both wives of Kashyapa Muni. One is the mother, Aditi, of the Devatas. And one is the mother of the Daityas, the Rakshasas, the demoniac. They're very powerful. You find Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, they never even bother asking for benedictions to be protected from human beings. Because human beings are not even thought of as a danger. It's like Sridhama Prabhu asking for the benediction that when I go to Radha Gopinath temple, that no little ants beat me up and kill me. Do you think like that? You don't even think of little ants. That's what we are to the Rakshasa race. So at one time, the demigods, they're ruling the universe. But the demoniac, they want to conquer the universe for their own. Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, But we find that historically, sometimes great Paramahamsa devotees are the kings and rulers of this race, like Prahlad and Bali Maharaj. But at one time, they decided the way they'll conquer the universe is to make their headquarters the planet Earth, because it's right in the middle. They'll mobilize their forces, and from the Earth, they'll first conquer the Earth, and then after conquering the Earth, they will conquer all the planets. So they all started taking birth on Earth. Kamsa, Jarasandha, Putana, Keshi, Salva. And Krishna, seeing, he appears once in a day of Brahma, and he came right at that time. And Hridayananda Maharaj explained to me how Krishna personally, with his own hands, along with Shri Balaram, he killed so many of the demons. But then at a certain point, he decided to leave the rest to his devotees. Jarasandha, after Kamsa was killed by Krishna, Kamsa was a leader. That was a big blow to their conspiracy when Krishna, 12-year-old boy, punched Kamsa in the head and killed him. Jarasandha came, 21 Akshahini divisions of soldiers? 22? His army, each time he attacked Krishna, it was bigger than the whole mobilized forces of both of the powers in Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra had 18 Akshahini divisions of soldiers. Jarasandha was coming with, I believe, 21. Millions, tens and millions of soldiers. And Krishna single-handedly annihilated all of them. But he didn't touch Jarasandha. Why? Because he knew Jarasandha, no matter how many times he's defeated, he'll become more envious. And revenge will burn in his heart. And he'll mobilize another army of 21 Akshahini divisions of soldiers. So Krishna, he just sat in one place, and Jarasandha was bringing all these demoniac beings from all over the world to him, and he was just killing them right in his own backyard. And then he had Bhima killed Jarasandha. When he was in Vrindavan, the most powerful demons of the universe, Pralambasura, Keshi, they were attacking Aristasura. Krishna was killing them all. But there were only a few left. And he wanted Arjuna and the Pandavas to do that work. So when Duryodhana was frustrated, fasting till death, he was brought to a planet of demoniac Rakshasas. And they told him, "You have been sent to the earth for a mission."
You cannot give up. You have to fight. You must go back. You must rule the world. You must destroy these Pandavas. That is your mission. You are empowered for that purpose. Go back. He went back. He was encouraged by that association. So from this story, we understand Duryodhana was not just a jealous cousin. He was a very, very demoniac person who was trying to exploit the resources of the earth. So he wanted so intensely to rule. And due to his association, Dhritarashtra became so terribly misled and confused. After the 12 years of banishment of the Pandavas, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, accepted the role of the humble servant of his devotee Yudhisthira Maharaj. To become his messenger. He went to try to make an arrangement for peace, proposing just give the Pandavas the bare minimum by which they could still perform their duty as Kshatriyas. Give them just 5 kingdoms and you keep the rest of the world. Dhritarashtra was inclined. But Duryodhana said, you give him anything, Father, I commit suicide. This kind of attachment to materialistic people will destroy our spiritual determination. Duryodhana had planned. He had so many plans. One time he made big feast with all kinds of decorative entertainment to offer to Krishna to convince him to be on their side. But Krishna went right to Vidura's house to eat some very simple bananas or whatever, because he wouldn't touch the food that was contaminated by the envious mentality of those who hurt his devotees. Krishna came, and Duryodhana's plan was to arrest him and put him in prison. Because if Krishna's in prison, the Pandavas will give up all courage to fight. Because he knew that all their strength, all their power was due to their faith in Krishna. So when Krishna came and presented his logic, Duryodhana sent his guards to arrest him. And Krishna manifested the Virat Roop, the universal form, to be seen by everyone. But still, although Duryodhana was able to witness that, due to that envy in his heart, he couldn't make the connection. So after all efforts failed, there was no other recourse but for there to be war. When the proclamation of war was made, then both sides have to canvass all the different kings of the world to take their side. Because Duryodhana was the reigning king, and he was very expert at flattery, bribing, diplomacy, and every other type of deceit. He collected 11 Akshas. He needed divisions of soldiers to fight for him. Yudhisthira Maharaj and Pandavas only collected 7. Please try to picture this in your mind. The greatest battle of all time about to be fought. It's interesting how the primary scriptures center around war. Ramayana, Mahabharata, two of the most common and popular scriptures for the general people of the world. They center around a battle in Sri Lanka and Kurukshetra. So all these kings are coming from all over the world. And they're assembled. And the designated time for the battle was to begin. Lord Krishna, he made a promise, I will not fight. Because of Krishna's fights, there's no meaning to the war. But on one side, I will give a division of my soldiers, and on the other side, I will not fight. I will just serve. Not even lift a weapon. So Duryodhana, with his materialistic vision, he was thinking, if Krishna doesn't fight, who needs Krishna? I'll take his soldiers. And Arjuna was thinking, if Krishna's on my side, nothing can defeat us. Krishna volunteered to take the position of Parthasarathi, chariot driver of Arjuna. Humble service. The two sides were assembled. Arjuna was seeing this vast sea of military phalanxes with soldiers who were all real Kshatriyas. Not like the soldiers today. When I was young, America was at war with Vietnam. And most of the population thought this is a useless, senseless war. We shouldn't even be there. So nobody was volunteering for the army. Can you fight a battle with no military? So they made draft, where they forcibly recruited you. As soon as you came to the age of 18 years old, you had to register for the draft. if you didn't, you go to jail. And it was called the selective service system. Then they select who they want. They tell you, you either go to battle or you go to jail. And if you go to jail, you'll never get a job because you'll be blacklisted for the rest of your life. Hare Krishna. So these are the kind of people that we're fighting. People who didn't want to be there. They weren't Kshatriyas like Bhishma or Drona. They just wanted to get out of there and go home. In fact, recently I was speaking to one of my godbrothers who's going to be coming here next month. He was quite a high-posted officer of the American Army in Vietnam. He told me there were basically, amongst the soldiers, there were two categories of soldiers in Vietnam in the American Army. There were those who were always intoxicated with drugs, and those who were always intoxicated with alcohol. Because they didn't want to be there. They just were intoxicated just to try to bear with this terrible, terrible existence they had to live, of people shooting at them and dead bodies and everything, getting wounded. This is not Kshatriyas. But in Kurukshetra, they were Kshatriyas. Every one of them. They were all heroes. They were eager to fight. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, this is the glory and the joy of a Kshatriya, to have a battle to fight. They don't mind dying. But they have to fight. Just like Hiranyaksha. He was a Kshatriya. He was just defeating and destroying everyone, but nobody could stand up to him. When he was told that Lord Varaha, he's a good fight for you, where is he? Everybody else is just impotent, impudent, they're nothing. I can just take them in my hands and throw them down. There's no challenge. I want to fight. They said, you go to Lord Varaha. He'll destroy you. He's so powerful. Where is he? That's the perfection of Kshatriya. To fight till you die. That's sense gratification. Because they have faith. If you fight and die in fighting, you go to heaven. Banasura, Lord Shiva gave him 1,000 arms. He was attacking people and nobody could fight it. They would just give up within a second. We give up, we give up. His arms had to find, he just started beating mountains to powder because he had to fight. So there were tens and millions of such Kshatriyas assembled on that battlefield of Kurukshetra, all roaring with eagerness for the battle to start. For such Kshatriyas, the smell of fresh blood enthuses them. Ah, It was a very exciting experience. Arjuna requested Krishna, "My Lord, please take my chariot between the two armies. I want to see who has come for this battle." Krishna drove the chariot between the two armies. But Krishna especially drove the chariot just close to Bhishma and Drona, so that Arjuna would see them first. Arjuna looked. Krishna said, "See who has assembled." Arjuna was paralyzed with grief and confusion. He said, "Krishna, how can I fight this battle? I see on both sides our grandfathers, teachers, brothers, cousins, friends. I cannot fight this battle." "Drona and Bhishma, my beloved grandfather and the teacher who has taught me everything, they are on the opposing side. What to speak of so many other relatives and dear friends? How could I fight against them? Even if I win this battle, everything we receive will be tainted with the blood of those we respect and love. We will never be able to enjoy it. And it is sinful, sinful to kill those we love, those we respect, those who are in the most honorable positions. And if all these warriors die, what will happen to the planet? There will be no one to protect the women. If women are not protected, they are exploited. And when women are exploited, there is unwanted progeny. Unwanted progeny, there will be no proper people to train them, no samskaras performed. Therefore, no proper sacrifices will be done. There will be no religion. The ethics, the morality, the very fiber of society will deteriorate and degrade, and it will become hellish. Arjuna presented so many arguments. Krishna, he told Arjuna, "But how are you yielding to this degrading impotence? You are a kshatriya. Such a battle coming unsought is glorious for a kshatriya." "Do not yield to this weakness of heart, Arjuna. But Arjuna could not accept. His heart was filled with compassion for the enemy. He did not want to harm them. He did not want to disrespect them. This is Vaishnav. He told Krishna, it is better if I just do not lift my weapons, but just allow myself to be killed on this battlefield. Better to be killed than kill the people we love and respect. Or perhaps I should just leave this battlefield and become a beggar. Due to so much feelings of love, compassion, and respect, he told Krishna, I will not fight. His mouth became dry, complexion pale, tears of distress flowing from his eyes, his limbs were trembling, his hair standing on end. His mind was reeling with pain and his heart was broken to pieces. He was shaking. His Gandiva bow fell from his hand. He became so much bewildered. He did not know what is right and what is wrong. He did not know who he was, where he was, how he was. In that state of confusion, he turned to Krishna. Tears in his eyes and folded palms. Karapanya doso pahatasva bhava prichchami tvam dharma samudacheha. Yatsrayasya nishtitan bruhitan me shishyasti ham sadimam tvam papanam. I am confused. I am bewildered. I have lost all composure due to weakness of heart. In this condition, Krishna, I am asking you to tell me what is best. I am your disciple. I am a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Krishna did not speak anything until Arjuna came to this platform of submissive surrender. Until he admitted from the core of his heart, I do not know, I'm suffering, please save me. Until we come to that platform, we're not really properly approaching Krishna or Guru. Tadvidi pranipatina pariprasnena sevaya. How do we approach Guru? First, we must submit ourselves. Then we must inquire submissively and be willing to carry out his orders by performing service. That was Arjuna's example. The fact is, we are all in the situation of Arjuna. Due to material attachments and conditionings, we are bewildered. We are being exploited and plundered by the forces of illusory energy. And yet, we're too weak-hearted to fight, what to speak of, even to know what to do. Let us compare ourselves to Arjuna's situation. Arjuna was sitting on a chariot, a celestial chariot given to him by Agni Dev, the demigod himself, to fight. And our chariot is this body, prone to birth, old age, disease, death, always giving us problems, full of so many deficiencies. Quite a worthless chariot. Arjuna had Krishna as his charioteer holding the reins. What do we have? We have our polluted intelligence holding the reins of the uncontrolled mind with the horses of the five uncontrolled senses. Arjuna had Gandiva bow. We don't have anything in our hands. Arjuna had Hanumanji and the flag of his chariot ready to roar and create fearlessness in the Pandavas and terror in the hearts of the Kurus. We are utterly unequipped. Arjuna, with all that he had, still humbled himself in total submission before Krishna. And yet we're thinking, I will fight this battle. I'm very intelligent. I'm very renounced. I'm very advanced. What we should be saying, I am a great fool. Therefore, we must follow in the footsteps of Arjuna and approach Krishna and approach Krishna's representatives with the desperate need to hear from them and to serve them. To the degree we have that spirit is to the degree we can understand Bhagavad Gita. Not to the degree we're Sanskrit scholars. There's hundreds and thousands of Sanskrit scholars who've recited the Gita thousands and thousands and thousands of times in their life and don't understand a word of it. To the degree we feel ourselves helpless, hopeless, and ignorant, to the degree we feel a desperation of need to submit ourselves to Krishna and his devotees to hear, to that degree, the mysteries of Bhagavad Gita are revealed to us by the mercy of Krishna. All transcendental knowledge and realization come through mercy. They do not come through our efforts. Our efforts are only to show Krishna we want his mercy. But we have to perform our efforts in such a way that will attract Krishna's mercy. We have to be eager to...
You ask Guru, you ask senior Vaishnavas? Not necessarily now. But you inquire from people who are experienced and who actually understand the science of Krishna consciousness nicely. And they will help to give you guidance. Then you know If you're following that guidance from the proper source, then you know. Otherwise, you do not know. We should never be in a state where we do not know. We have the association of devotees to clarify our confusions and doubts. The only real question is, do you want to know? Or do you want to do what you want to do? Then we have to, but to mean another thing, because you have an ulterior motive. Being hypocritical is to preach one thing, to advocate one thing, and to do something completely different, because you have ulterior motives. So they are both various varieties of trying to exploit. If you are in a mood of service, if you are in a mood of humility, there will be no duplicity or hypocrisy. You will be honest, you will be straightforward. And what you speak, you will do. What Krishna speaks, you will do.
Maharaj, often when we speak of these mukti, different muktis, and the sarshti mukti of equal opulence,
horrible, they haven't done a good job, but still we appreciate them for their service. Is it duplicitous?
It is mercifulness. We should appreciate and encourage any devotee for any attempt they make to advance in Krishna consciousness, to serve Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much. We would like to welcome all of our guests. Today is a very auspicious occasion. It is not an ordinary marriage. It is the fulfillment of the will of God within this world. Krishna has created the sacred vow of marriage for the purpose of a man and woman coming together to help one another in fulfilling the real responsibility of this human life. Lord Chaitanya has instructed us that whether one is a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, whether one is a Brahmacharya, Grihastha, or Vanaprastha, or a Sannyasi, that one should live by the pure teachings of Krishna and exemplify those teachings for the service of the whole world. The greatest need in human society today is for married couples to live together with the pure desire to spread love of God throughout the whole world. And in this westernized society, we find this very rare. The culture of this great land of India is practically lost. And worshipable are those great and special souls who are willing to dedicate their lives to restore the true. But whatever I have not described, I will describe extensively in the future. If by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, I live for so many days that I can fulfill my desires, I will give full consideration to these pastimes. This particular verse is very sweet and beautiful. Everyone listen very carefully. By hearing this verse nicely, again and again and again, you will be awarded the benediction of purely chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra.
Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama. version. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. According to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there are three kinds of devotees. The world is celebrating this verse. According to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there are three kinds of devotees known as bhajan vigya, experts in devotional service, bhajan shila, devotees engaged in devotional service, and Krishna nami dikshita Krishna nam kori, initiated devotees engaged in chanting. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita begs to have to go, and all these people are doing all sorts of things. So many encumbrances. However, if you're chanting your 16 rounds sincerely every day, the husband and the wife, if you're worshipping the deity or coming to the temple and worshipping the deity, if you're associating with nice devotees, then even though these encumbrances are, which are there for everyone and anyone in household life, it actually, you transcend it. It all becomes Krishnaized, spiritualized. How is it? Thakur Bhakti Vinod, he had a wife and 10 children. Don't think he was without encumbrances. He had to raise all those children. Sometimes they were sick, sometimes they were doing not so well in their studies. This is a big problem, a big encumbrance to the Indian parents. Studies. What will happen to me? I transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. You could, you should, you will. Maybe you already do. When Krishna's in the center, then those encumbrances are no longer obstacles. But rather those encumbrances become your service. Everything you do is for Krishna. Everything you do is to help your family become Krishna conscious. Whether you are wife, whether you are husband, whether you are children. So Prabhupada explains here that the purpose of basic education is to encourage the student to become free from family encumbrances. Some people will be free from family encumbrances by not getting married. But then you have ashram encumbrance. When Krishna's in the center, then it is directed toward real love. We may call it love, but according to our definition, it is not love at all. Our definition of love is the unconditional, unmotivated expression of the eternal soul toward God. That type of affection. It is based in knowledge. If there is no God, it is avidya, it is ignorance. We're not this body, we're not this mind, but we are loving a body and mind. Therefore it is not real. What else? Become impersonal, uncaring. Somebody needs help. Maya, what do I care? I'm going to chant Hare Krishna. Somebody needs care. I'm going to go worship the deity. I'm Krishna conscious. So that's another extreme. That's called impersonalism in the name of personalism. So material affection should not be given up. It should be spiritualized. In this material world, a father or mother that it's in the mode of goodness is so affectionate to their child. In the mode of passion and ignorance, they may not have time for their child and they may hate their child. But in the mode of goodness, a mother and a father are so affectionate. You have to tax the citizens, you have to punish the rogues and the thieves. You have to have armies and soldiers to protect from enemies. You have to make laws and enact laws. You have to raise family. Very, very important service. A king was responsible for every praja, every living entity within his kingdom. Every blade of grass, every tree, every insect, every bird, every fish in the water, he was responsible that they were protected and that they had all facilities. And most of all, he was responsible that every human being achieves the perfection of Krishna consciousness by living according to the principles of devotional service. Big responsibility. So Brahma explained that you must accept this responsibility. He's already renounced everything, but yet he wants to hear the pure devotional service of this great king and grihastha, Swayambhuvamanu. He's eager, longing to hear more and more and more, because it is the story of Krishna, the story of the intimate, loving reciprocation between Krishna and his devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam Amalam Puranam, it is the spotless Purana. Srimad Bhagavatam is only speaking of undivided, unalloyed surrender to Krishna in the mood of pure love. That's all. There's no other subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, we are very, very eager to hear all these wonderful stories. Because they teach us the ultimate perfection is life. But then she had to go and do her service of giving in charity and greeting the guests who came for this Uthana ceremony. So she put Krishna in a little cradle under a cart, big cart. And Krishna was sleeping under the cart. Very nice. However, an asura, rakshasa, demon, entered into the cart. Srila Prabhupada explains how this is possible. Just as there are ghosts, ghosts are very evil spirits that have that have subtle bodies, but because of terrible sins of the past, are very abusive lifestyles. They are not allowed to have a gross body. But they have all kinds of gross desires. So they're always trying to enter. Rakshasa, demon, was within this cart. What was his purpose? To fall down and crush Krishna to death, then to eat him and drink his blood. Hare Krishna. So little baby Krishna, who was only 3 months old, he was laying, and then he woke up, and he desired to drink milk from Yashoda, but Yashoda was not there. So with his little foot, which was as soft as a freshly formed leaf from a plant, that little foot kicked. And when it kicked, it touched the wheel of the cart. When it touched the wheel of the cart, the wheel, it just broke, came off of its axle. All the spokes. Nanda Maharaj came with the gopas, cowherd men, and they they began to think that it is astonishing that this innocent child was taken away by this Rakshasa to be eaten. But he has returned without even being killed or even injured. We know the reason. How many of you know the reason? We know the reason Krishna killed him. That's because we're not so advanced. But the Vrijavasis are more advanced. So they were not thinking Krishna is God. They were thinking he's our child. If he's God, how can we love him so intimately as if he's our child? They were thinking, because this demon is so sinful and cruel and impious, it is the Lord who is feeding him the milk from her breast. Krishna was very happily drinking. Yashoda Mai was very happily giving her love to Krishna in the form of this milk. And then Krishna began to yawn. He opened his mouth, like little babies do, to yawn. And Mother Yashoda happened to see what was in his mouth. The entire universe. She saw the universe in his mouth. She saw the entire sky and all the planetary systems, the demigods, the mountains, the rivers, the oceans, all living entities within the universe, within the tiny little child of Krishna who was yawning. Yashoda Mai was astonished. How is this possible? She closed her eyes because she did not like to see this. Why are the Americans and the Russians fighting like cats and dogs? Why are the blacks and whites fighting like cats and dogs? It's all due to the bodily concept of life. You're thinking, I'm a black man from Africa, and you made me a slave, and I'm going to beat you down if I see you on the street, because you're white. And you represent slavery for us, torture and killing. My grandfathers, they died in the fields of starvation. They were beat to death by your white brothers, by your white forefathers. And if I see you, I will kill you. I will beat you. And the whites thinking, blacks, they are low class, they are uncivilized, they are aborigines. We must keep them down, no rights, let them be in poverty, keep them away from our children, keep them away from our existence, send them back to Africa. If they won't be slaves, they should go back home. But they've been there for 10, 20 generations. Hare Krishna, this is the situation. You have your scheduled castes and you have your other castes and so many rights and so many no rights and so much conflict. But in the Western countries, these types of distinctions were creating civil wars of nations, millions killed in bloodshed, and imminent nuclear disaster to the whole world. So Prabhupada, this was his understanding, his realization, we should understand. Jeff, it is not the civil rights conferences to try to bring freedom to the blacks. These are not the solutions to any of the problems. The real solution is we must understand that we are not these bodies. Every living being is part and parcel of Krishna. Every living being should be respected because they are the children of God. As the demigods, the rishis, they all worship me. Why is my feet so worshipable? Only because I humbly serve my devotees. Because I humbly serve my devotees, by their blessings, my feet are worshipable. That is the actual feeling of the Supreme Absolute Truth. When Krishna came to this world, he performed many wonderful activities. And some less intelligent people think that they are mythology, that they are just fictional stories to teach some good lessons to human society. Why do they think that they are fictional? Because they never met anyone that can do what is spoken of in the pastimes of the Lord. How Krishna, when he's only 7 years old, lifts the Govardhan hill with the little finger of his left hand. The Brahma Sutra explains, Atato Brahma Jigyasa Janmadya Shayataha. That means the Supreme Absolute Truth is Him from whom everything emanates, the something from which everything is coming. And now that we have come to this human form of life, our real purpose is to understand that Absolute Truth. So when the Absolute Truth descends within this material existence, He is not going to behave like the rest of us. He's going to demonstrate the most wonderful pastimes to attract our minds to again reuniting with love and devotion through intimate ecstatic exchanges. So when Krishna appeared in this world approximately 5,000 years ago, as historically is written in Srimad Bhagavatam, he performed many, many wonderful, wonderful activities. And the breath is not, it smells terrible. And his sharp teeth, they're like the peaks of mountains. We know what this is. This is a big serpent that has come to kill us. But let's go inside because Krishna will save us. We have nothing to fear. We have Krishna. So smiling and laughing, they danced right into the mouth of the serpent. All the while looking at Krishna. We're going in. You'll save us. You always save your devotees, Krishna. These little children were so fearless. If we become so childlike and have that faith in Krishna, we also become fearless. Otherwise, this world is full of fears. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. There's danger at every step. How could we not be fearful? So, then his mouth opened and all the friends came out, Krishna came out, and that soul entered into the body of Krishna. Which means he actually was given liberation in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, to be an eternal associate of the Lord. Why? Because he died thinking of Krishna. Krishna was so big in his mouth, he was thinking, Krishna, Krishna, and it was terribly painful, but through the pain of suffocation, all of his sins were removed, and all that was left was his thinking of Krishna, that Krishna's in me. So because of that, he got a beautiful spiritual body in the spiritual world. So Shukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Pariksha that every day, the little boys, the gopas, would go home to Nandagaon, where Krishna's home was, and they would tell everyone what pastimes Krishna performed that day. So he was a very serious person. German scholars can be very analytical and meticulous in their research. So he did very, very deep research. And after years of such research and traveling to various places in India, reading so many books, he came to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our Param Guru, and he said, I have come to the conclusion that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna. He is the greatest of the great. And he explained why. He says, all the other gods are doing work. He said, I see Kali. She has hatchets and swords, she's working, doing fighting. And Durga, she has her 8 arms, and she has so many weapons, riding on a tiger, ready for fighting. And I've seen Kartikeya, he has his arrow, and Ganesh has his axe. And I've seen Shiva, he's working very hard in his meditation.
And Rama is given the knowledge of how to create all of the varieties of manifestations within each universe. But Rama is a person like you and me, who has extraordinarily good karma. He's selected by Krishna to take the role of the creator and the father of all living entities within each particular universe. the Lord Brahma. He knew the greatness of Krishna. He was thinking, Krishna is the cause of everything's success. He's the controller of all controllers. I have just seen how he killed Agasura. But then, after Krishna killed Agasura, Brahma and the demigods were all watching. What a personality. This terrible, terrible demon who caused so much fear everywhere he went. Krishna just gave him liberation within seconds. Then after that, Krishna went to take lunch with his friends on the bank of the holy river Tula. And he was just a little boy. And he started playing with his friends. And they each had their little lunchbox. And they opened their lunchboxes. And each boy was looking to see what everyone had in their lunchbox. And they were thinking, oh, mine is very good. I have this nice samosa. I have this nice rapskula. And they would eat it and taste it and say, would you like to try it? And they were all exchanging. And Krishna was taking something from Mother Yashoda's food that was cooked and distributing it to his friends. And his friends were eating some things and then giving it to Krishna and then he would eat it. And they were all praising the different types of food. And just for game's sake, they would put their food. Some of them would make a plate out of flowers, some out of beads, some would make a plate out of rocks, some out of trees.
This is the gift that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us. I think that God has given us the entrance into the intimate, ecstatic, loving abode of Goloka Vrindavan. What a man and what a brother. And how do we achieve it? I have to get the practice of him by being very humble and sincere. What number of enough of Vivanda Rana claims in our heart to chant in his own name. I will get another few minutes.
Rajam Jirajakuyam Pavitram Itam Bhutamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharamam Shushukam Kartam Avyayam.
This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets.
It is
the greatest benediction that God gives us is the opportunity to serve. The great acharyas consider this the ultimate blessing, the opportunity to serve. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, na danam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janamani janmani suri bhavata bhakti rahaita kidvai. I do not want any amount of wealth. I do not want to enjoy with beautiful women. I do not want fame and recognition amongst men. No human existence is to realize God. Real happiness cannot come from any material arrangement for enjoyment. Real happiness awakens naturally through the realization of our own eternal blissful nature. Dasara is a day that symbolizes good over evil. Spirituality over materialism. Right over wrong. These values should be inculcated in all of our young people's hearts in a way that they are convinced. Who can show people by their example what they should strive for in life? Then there can be real prosperity. When Ram was fighting with Ravana in Sri Lanka, he had the help of an army of monkeys. These monkeys headed by Sugriva Hanuman, they didn't have any proper weapons. Whatever, they would just pick up trees and throw them.
Ravana's army had the most sophisticated military weapons. In Ram's whole army, there was only two bows and arrows, one held by Ram, one by Lakshmi. The desire to exploit the property of God is like Ravana living in your own heart. But Lord Chaitanya came with the most powerful of all God's weapons, which is his own holy name. As Ram killed Ravana with an arrow that was given to him by Lord Brahma, Lord Chaitanya has come to kill the demoniac mentality within everyone's hearts through the great weapon of the chanting of the holy name of God. The name of the Lord has all the power of the Lord Himself. It destroys all of our material. And what they did is they started throwing blood and dead corpses and stool and urine and all other abominable substance all over the arena of sacrifice. That is what they would do. And they would personally come and terrorize and kill any sages that resisted. So on this day when they appeared in terrible, terrible, fearful, monstrous forms, Sri Ramchandra took two arrows, and with one arrow he killed the demon Subahu. And with the other arrow, it struck the chest of Maricha and threw him 800 miles into the ocean. And the sages were very happy. And Ram and Lakshman, playing the parts of noble human beings in this incarnation, they actually worshipped the sages and were grateful to these great Brahmins for... It was pulled by on wheels in a beautiful chest by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of very strong, stalwart people. Previously, Sita and Ram happened to see one another. And just by the glance from each other's most loving eyes, their original love was awakened. Ramchandra is the supreme enjoyer, and Sita is the supreme devotee, whose existence is exclusively meant for the enjoyment of God. What is the difference between Sita and Ram? The Shastras explain that Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, and this truly is the perfection of our hearts to hear of the wonderful meeting of Sita and Ram. But playing the role of human beings, Sita was simply praying to the Supreme Godhead that Ram will lift the bow and take my hand in marriage. And knowing that this was the loving desire of his consort, Ram, Lakshman, and Vishwamitra Muni entered into the arena where all the great persons had failed to even lift the mighty bow. Ramchandra turned to Vishwamitra. The history of these wonderful pastimes still exists in these holy places. At that time, everyone was jubilant, and Sita Devi came forward
with the blessings of her father, Janak, with the garland of victory. And she placed it on the neck of Sri Ram, and everyone began to cheer and chant his holy name. Shri Shri Sitaram Ki. And Janak was just jubilant. He was so excited that let us have the marriage as soon as possible. And Vishwamitra Muni and Janak, the mental personality of Godhead, with full attention, and thus gained release from the course of material existence. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The setting of the sun does not mean the end of the sun. It means that the sun is out of our sight. Similarly, the end of the mission of the Lord on a particular planet or universe only means that He is out of our sight. The end of the Jadu dynasty also does not mean that it is annihilated. It disappears along with the Lord out of our sight. As Maharaj Yudhisthira decided to prepare to go back to Godhead, so also Kunti decided transcendental devotional service of the Lord, which guarantees one a passport for going back home, back to Godhead. After quitting this present material body, the beginning of devotional service to the Lord is the beginning of spiritualizing the present body. And thus, an unalloyed devotee of the Lord loses all material contact in the present body. The abode of the Lord is not a myth, as is thought by the unbelievers or ignorant people, but one can reach there by any material, but one cannot reach there by any material means like a Sputnik or space capsule. But one can certainly reach there after leaving this present body, and one must prepare himself to go back to Godhead by practicing devotional service. For going back to Godhead, and Kunti adopted it. Of the Pandavas, upon hearing Arjuna's explanation of Krishna's disappearance from the mortal vision of this world, and seeing her own eldest son preparing to renounce everything in response in order to fix his consciousness upon Krishna, the Lord sometimes manifests himself and sometimes is physically unmanifest. But in either case, we should know that the Lord is always present. Just as the sun is sometimes present to our vision, after the sun sets, it is aprakrita, it is no longer present to our vision. But we know that still the sun is existing. And here, in this particular verse, Ekanta Bhaktya Bhagavati Adhokshajay, Krishna is addressed as Adhokshaja. Adha means subdued. Aksha means the senses. Ja means generated. Adhokshaja means one who is beyond the senses, or beyond the knowledge that can be generated or acquired through the senses. Adhokshija explains the nature of the mental to this mortal realm of consciousness and sense perception. So Krishna is always existing in this state, and the devotees of the Lord are not concerned with seeing Krishna through our mortal senses or understanding Krishna through our finite mind. Krishna says in Gita that it is only by unalloyed devotion, sarvapadiva nirmuktam tatparadvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktaruchyate. When our senses become completely freed from all the dirt of material contamination, when our senses become spiritualized through the process of bhakti, then Krishna can reveal himself, and he does reveal himself on a spiritual platform when we have spiritual...
All places of misery, they're all places of death. Good karma, you go up, the good karma runs out, you're cast down. Bad karma, you go down and suffer, when the bad karma runs out, you come up. But what do you do when you're up? And what do you do when you're down? The devotee knows there's only one thing to do that has real intelligence, and that is to chant the holy name. Krishna establishes how the jivatma is always in the position of being controlled. And Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to be controlled by the all-attractive, loving form of Krishna, rather than the merciless forms of material illusion. And one who lives by this principle understands Gita as it is. We have read the very essence and culmination of Bhagavad Gita today. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches knowledge, confidential knowledge, more confidential knowledge, most confidential knowledge, and the most confidential of all confidential knowledge. He teaches what is the soul. He teaches what is the Paramatma. He teaches what is Brahman. He teaches what is devotion. But in these verses, he is teaching the very ultimate knowledge of the Gita. He says, I have given you confidential knowledge. I've explained it already in 9th chapter. Man manabhava madbhakto majjajinna namaskaru. But now I'm repeating it again. This is the most important of all teachings. It is the essence of the Gita. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my dear friend. This is Krishna's promise. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladeva Jabushan. They say that Arjuna may respond to Krishna, that this is your promise. But I know what people from Mathura are like. They're always making promises. They're always saying, this is my vow. And I know what, when Krishna was living in Vrindavan, he didn't always say what he did. Therefore, Krishna says, this is my solemn vow, because you are my dear friend, and I will never speak a lie to my friend. This is the absolute truth, making a vow to all living beings. You keep your mind fixed in thinking of me. You become my devotee. Worship me and offer homage unto me. You will come to me without fail. This is my promise. Sarvataraman Purityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papibhyo Moksha Ishani Vasujaha. Arjuna, I have taught you so many religious principles. Bhagavad Gita I've taught, Karma Kanda, Karma Yoga I've taught, Jnana Yoga I've called Jnana Yoga. I've taught Astanga Yoga. I've taught Bhakti Yoga. Now I'm telling you this, abandon them all. Forget it all and just surrender to me. That is the essence of everything that's in the Gita, to bring us to the point of surrendering to Krishna. What does it mean to surrender? It means to give up our ego and accept the order of Krishna as our life and soul. How can you think of Krishna properly if you're full of sin? You cannot. And Krishna says, you surrender unto me and I will relieve you of all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Nothing to fear. Because it is Krishna's promise. This is the last instruction of Gita. It is from this point that Srimad Bhagavatam begins. What was the quality of the Pandavas? They were always thinking of Krishna. What was the quality of Prahlad Maharaj? Tatenukam pamsa sumikshamano bunjana ivatma kritam vipakam hridhvar bubur viva tadam namaste jivete samukta yudhvesadayava. Any situation that Krishna put him in, whether he was in a pit of snakes, whether he was put in blazing fire, whether he was submerged in the bottom of the ocean, whether there were maddening rakshasas surrounding him with tridents trying to destroy him, whether he was thrown off mountains from the sky, or whether he was sitting on the throne as the king, he was always thinking of Krishna. Ambarish Maharaj, whether he was performing tapasya, whether he was ruling his kingdom in Madhya Pradesh, or whether he was sitting in Madhuban, Braj, seeing a fiery monster created by Durvas Muni about to destroy him, he was always thinking of Krishna. He was Krishna's devotee. He was worshiping Krishna. He was bowing down to Krishna. That is the essence of life. Kapila Dev explains, of all the various instructions, injunctions, and various ritualistic activities that are prescribed in the various scriptures of the world, they're all meant to bring us to come to the understanding of two principles.
Perform all miracles. He is the supreme absolute truth.
और भगवान स्वयं तो परम सत्य हैं, वो तो सब जादू कर सकते हैं।
But knowing in Kali Yuga there will be so many pretenders who will mislead people, the Lord Himself accepted the humble position of a disciple in a disciplic succession.
और ये जानते हुए स्वयं भगवान ने जो है एक परंपरा में जो है शिष्य के रूप में दीक्षा स्वीकार की।
He instructed his dear disciples, Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Sanatan Goswami.
और उन्होंने अपने प्रिय शिष्य श्री रूप गोस्वामी और श्री सनातन गोस्वामी को शिक्षा प्रदान की।
The disciplic succession was passed down to Jiva Goswami and later on through so many great, great acharyas.
और वो परंपरा फिर श्री जीव गोस्वामी और बाद में कई कई महान आचार्यों को प्राप्त हुई।
His divine grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, accepted the knowledge of the mercy of this great Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya.
परम पूज्य कृष्ण कृपा मूर्ति श्रीला एसी भक्तिदान स्वामी प्रभुपाद ने इस परंपरा में जो है ज्ञान को स्वीकार किया।
He explained that my only qualification is I am simply repeating what I have heard from the great acharyas without adding or subtracting anything.
वो कहते हैं कि मेरी एक ही योग्यता है कि मैं वही जो आचार्य से सुना है उसी को दोहरा रहा हूँ बिना कुछ जोड़े या कम किए।
It was Lord Chaitanya's desire that the name of Krishna be chanted in every town and
of the residents of Vrindavan, those who have the most honored of all positions is the Braja Gopis. Because to the most extent, intense, deepest degree, they submerge themselves in the ocean of this verse, of always thinking of Krishna, becoming Krishna's devotee, worshipping Him and offering homage unto Him. The acharyas describe, and Srila Prabhupada has so nicely explained, the different rasas that are revealed within our hearts by the mercy of Krishna to those who are always thinking of Him. To always think of Him, become His devotee, worship Him and offer homage means pure devotee. There is pure devotee in Santaras, neutrality. Pure devotee in Dasyaras, servitude. Sakyaras, to always remember Krishna and be His devotee as a friend. Vatsalyaras, to love Him as a parent. And Singharas, Adiras, Madhuryaras, the original of all rasas, conjugal love. And all other rasas are coming from that original rasa. And they are all revealing only portions, part and parcel portions, of the intensity and the degree by which the devotees are always remembering Krishna. And that is why Krishna left Vrindavan, to show the world the glories of the Brijavasis and the Gopis. They could not stop forgetting Him for a moment. Impossible. He stole their hearts. They could not get it back, nor did they want it back. Even in this world, it's easy to love someone when they're doing everything for you and they're right with you and they're very nice.
But when they leave you, for years and years, Krishna left the Brijavasis, and the gopis and gopas, not a moment could ever pass without their intense longing and crying for Krishna. Uddhava was best friend of Krishna in Dwarka. He was with Krishna practically all day and all night. All the other inhabitants of Dwarka, they honored Uddhava the most because he had such a deep personal friendship with Krishna. Krishna would talk with him, eat with him, lay with him, joke with him, discuss revealing his mind to him, even asking him for serious advice. That was their relationship. When in Mathura, Krishna sent Uddhava, I want to give message to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, because they miss me very much. I want to give them hope. I want them to understand I'm remembering them. I promised them I would come back. They're only living on the basis of the hope that that promise will come true. But actually, why did Krishna send Uddhava to Vrindavan? Because he wanted Uddhava to be trained up in real devotional service by the Braja Gopis. And through Uddhava, he wanted to reveal to the whole world. Uddhava is not an ordinary being. Krishna told Uddhava that you are so dear to me, neither Shankarshan or Lakshmi or Brahma or Shiva or even myself are as dear to me as you are. Hare Krishna. He wasn't talking of the Lakshmi in Vaikuntha. He was talking of Chanchala Lakshmi, in this, the Lakshmi of this world, that was born from the ocean of milk. Because in Vaikuntham, Lakshmi is not Chanchala. She's steadfast right at the feet of Krishna. But when Lakshmi appears in this world, she's Chanchala. Haribo, she wanders here and there and never stays any place too long. So he selected Uddhava, his dearmost servant, to go to Vrindavan. And when he saw Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mai, Sri Dama, Subala, Stoka Krishna, Maru Mangal, when he saw the gopis headed by Lalita Vishaka Sri Radha, when he saw their ecstasies in love and separation, they were weeping, they were crying, they only immersed in thinking of Krishna, unconditionally making garlands for him, cooking for him, arranging everything for him, hoping he will return. Uddhava realized, I have no love. Uddhava came to the conclusion, I'm not even a devotee. When I stand before them, it was like when Lord Brahma saw Krishna, he was feeling like a firefly in front of the sun, as far as being a controller. As far as being a devotee, Uddhava felt, I have no devotion at all. I'm void.